This is Radio Superior 1954, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the evening Gather Round show.
Come on in and gather around, campers. Tim Michaels here lighting the old campfire. It's Friday, March 12th, 1954. Lou Martin has the news for you to peruse. The labor guy is in. We have the Oscars and the Raffies. Colonel Raffaele has threatened to end his boycott of our radio program. I really think deep down he misses me. Ford Hopkins is picking up the tap for the 6 o'clock news. Get your 11 cents worth because that's how much they charge for 100 aspirins at Ford Hopkins. Your turn at the campfire, Lou.
Good evening, Tim, and good listeners. A probe shapes up on the Cohen Army pressure charges. McCarthy cries blackmail. And Drew Pearson says McCarthy can't be appeased. We begin our world report from the nation's capital.
This is Jack Bell in Washington. Republican Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin cried blackmail today at an Army report that he and his chief counsel, Roy Cohn, applied pressure for special treatment of a drafted aide. Four members of McCarthy's own permanent Senate investigation subcommittee, one a Republican, asked for an early meeting of the group to consider the report. The sequence of developments following disclosure of the Army report by Senate sources last night was this. Republican Senator Potter of Michigan, a member of McCarthy's committee, announced he had asked McCarthy to call a closed session to go into all the facts. Potter says Cohn should be removed if what he called the shocking charges against the 27-year-old committee counsel were true. The Army report says Cohn had voiced threats that Army Secretary Robert Stevens would be through and the Army wrecked if Private David Shine were sent overseas. Shine, a pal of Cohn, was a committee consultant until he was drafted last fall. The three Democratic senators, McClellan of Arkansas, Symington of Missouri, and Jackson of Washington, say they assume McCarthy will call an early meeting. McCarthy held a news conference at which he flung his countercharge of blackmail and said he was leaving for Manitowoc, Wisconsin, where he has a speaking engagement. He says he'll be back in Washington on Monday. McCarthy says there had been a conversation between Army legal advisor John Adams and himself a number of months ago. Quoting McCarthy, Adams, while he didn't say in so many words, warned me then that unless investigation of communism in the Army was discontinued, we would be embarrassed by a report that was being prepared. I told him we would not be blackmailed. No investigation will be ended because of threats or blackmail, unquote. In Washington, this is Jack Bell.
James Marlowe here. In the past 10 days, Senator Joseph McCarthy has been under the most intense crossfire of his 8 Senate years. Another man might have been shaken, shocked, or stopped. Not McCarthy. He's still fighting. As events pile up, it seems his political life is at stake. Here are the main events of the past 10 days. March 2nd, Republican National Committee Chairman Leonard Hall comes out saying he cannot go along with the Wisconsin Republican senator when he attacks those fighting communism just as conscientiously as he is. March 3rd, at a news conference, President Eisenhower mildly criticizes McCarthy for his handling of witnesses. McCarthy replies he'll handle witnesses as he sees fit. March 4th, Secretary of Defense Wilson says, quote, just damn Tommy rot to charges that the Army coddles communists. The White House says hundreds of telegrams pour in and run 9-1 in the president's favor. McCarthy says letters and telegrams to him run 95% in his favor. Republican members of McCarthy's committee dressed down committee counsel Roy Cohn for allegedly intervening with Army for special treatment for David Shine. Shine was Cohn's associate on the committee until drafted. March 5th, Special Assistant to Secretary of the Army Robert Stevens, John Cain, resigned, saying his chief has not had fighting support in the struggle with McCarthy. McCarthy-Stevens feud began when Stevens says McCarthy abused a general. March 6th, on a nationwide television hookup, Adlai Stevenson attacked McCarthy and Eisenhower for not being tougher with McCarthy. March 9th, Republican Senator Flanders of Vermont scorches McCarthy in a Senate speech, saying McCarthy is doing his best to wreck the party. That evening, CBS commentator Edward R. Murrow devotes his 30-minute program to McCarthy. The network reports being swamped with calls and telegrams overwhelmingly in favor of Murrow. March 11th, McCarthy called as a witness a middle-aged Negro woman, Mrs. Annie Lee Moss, a suspended Army communications worker, saying he was going to show how the Army handled a communist. Mrs. Moss denies ever being a communist. Democratic Senator Symington of Missouri says he's inclined to believe her. She says two other women by the same name live in Washington. On time provided by radio commentator Fulton Lewis Jr., McCarthy flamed back at Stevenson, Flanders, and Murrow. Still, yesterday on March 11th, the Army gives inquiring senators a report claiming McCarthy and Cohn interceded for Shine, and that Cohn threatened the Army and Secretary Stevens if Shine didn't get special treatment. In D.C., this is James Marlowe.
This is Drew Pearson with the Washington Merry-Go-Round. When the Republican Party threw a big cheese party for newsmen at the opening of Congress this year, Joe McCarthy came up to John Foster Dulles, put his arm around his shoulder and said, "Haven't I been a good boy lately?" What McCarthy referred to was the fact that he had lain off criticizing the State Department for a few weeks, partly as a result of a compromise agreement patched up with Vice President Nixon in Miami last December. Nixon had urged McCarthy to lay off the witch hunting and turn the problem of communism over to Senator Jenner's International Security Committee, where it properly belongs. In turn, Nixon promised that Attorney General Herbert Brownell would turn over to McCarthy various cases of alleged graft and inefficiency, which Nixon said would reflect on the Truman administration. Thus, McCarthy would continue to get the headlines while probing something that legitimately came under his Government Operations Committee. McCarthy agreed. With the Washington Merry-Go-Round, this is Drew Pearson.
This is Moscow, Eddie Gilmore reporting. Foreign Minister Molotov says results of the Berlin conference can be measured only by what happens when the Big Four meet April 26th with Communist China and other nations at Geneva to discuss peace in Asia and Vietnam. In a 7,500-word report on the Berlin talks, which ended 15 days ago, Molotov reiterated Soviet charges that Western defense preparations point to a third world war. The statement, played up by all Moscow newspapers and broadcast by Moscow radio, criticized U.S. Secretary of State John Foster Dulles for making speeches about the conference and representing himself as a zealous champion of freedom of the people and the champion of free elections. Molotov says the Berlin conference was worthwhile because it aired world questions and cleared the road to the Geneva parley of definite international significance on Korea and Indochina. In Moscow, this is Eddie Gilmore.
This flash just in from Munich. Bavarian border police report that two U.S. military planes were attacked this afternoon near the Czech border by Soviet-made MiGs. The source gave the following account. Two U.S. Navy planes were flying over Austria when they strayed over Czech territory. They were attacked by MiG fighters and were badly shot up. They made their way back to Munich. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Tim Buckles has this message from Ford Hopkins.
Thank you, Lou. Boy, we've got some great bargains for you at Ford Hopkins Rexall Drugstore here in Superior. Now, these prices are effective Monday evening, Tuesday, and Wednesday. 100% USP aspirin, 5 grain at only 11 cents. Zinc ointment, 14 cents for a 1-ounce tube. 39-cent bowl brush for only 19 cents. Child's roller skates, $1.69 value for $1.19. Plastic tea aprons, 14 cents. Household envelopes, 100 in a box for 24 cents. A cotton throw rug, $1.19. Or a wire dish drainer, only 69 cents. Just some of the bargains that you'll find at Ford Hopkins Rexall Drugstore at 13th and Tower in Superior. Lou?
City councilmen are faced with a request to prevent the sale of beer at Municipal Stadium when it meets Tuesday. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the council news.
The Superior Civic Baseball Association is applying for a license to sell beer at the Muni. In a letter to City Manager Robert Bomberger, Association Business Manager W.F. Hahn says they're exploring every possible angle to make more money for the Superior Blues Ball Club for the 1954 season. The Blues have been losing money, and there is talk the team may fold. With the sale of beer at the Muni, it will provide more money for the club. Beer will be sold and dispensed at a special concession stand, which is a ways away from the regular concession stands. All beer sold will be dispensed in large paper cups, and it will not be hawked in the stands. Also, city councilmen will look at several stipulations to strengthen the proposed nursing home ordinance. Rest home operators and city officials met about it today. Some of the revisions include 24-hour nursing service. Every nursing home shall have a competent person awake and on duty during all hours of the day and night. Care of bedfast patients includes three balanced meals suited to the patient, served daily with a weekly menu posted. All stairways should be provided with handrails and non-slip stair treads, and stairwells should be protected with guardrails. Floors should not be highly polished. Lou?
Thanks, Mike. And from our 10-year-old news file on March the 12th, 1944, the Red Cross reached 56% of its war fund quota of 58,500. That was announced by Chairman John Berg. Mr. Berg says the night shift at the Butler Shipyard returned pledge cards for 96% of the crew, and if this percentage could be maintained by the day shift, the Butler Yard quota would be met. New members of the 100% Club include Ashby Floral Company, Cedar Jewelry, Reed Merrill Car Sales, National Bank of Commerce, and the Army Air Corps College Training Detachment at the State Teachers College.
Well, at least we don't have any slippery floors around here.
Just sticky floors from the things that you announcers spill.
We do that for the safety of you elderly newsmen like yourself, Lou. Hey, I got some big weather news for campers for this Friday night, March 12, 1954. The head of the lakes area is expected to get 2 to 4 inches of snow this weekend with blustery conditions. The Duluth Weather Bureau says easterly winds, which reached a steady speed of 32 miles per hour with gusts to 45 this morning, are expected to remain tonight and tomorrow. Gale force winds whipped Superior this afternoon. The Berwyn Fuel Company reported their wind gauge registered a peak of 62 miles an hour. That'll blow the man down. Let's bundle up with the Jimmy Dorsey Orchestra and Soul Rare on the Tim Michaels Evening Gather Round Show. Jimmy Dorsey and his orchestra with So Rare on KUWS.
Oscar nominations are out, and Erskine Johnson has the Hollywood Today report.
From Here to Eternity, a hard-bitten drama of army life, slept through with 13 nominations in the Oscar Derby, and appears to be the picture to beat. Current Hollywood betting favors tough Burt Lancaster for the top Oscar in his sergeant's role in Eternity. Deborah Carr, who abandoned queenly roles to play an army wife of loose morals, could also be a winner, although Audrey Hepburn of Roman Holiday appears to be the favorite so far. Crooner Frank Sinatra and Donna Reed appear to be heavy choices for the supporting Oscars. Although both had star billing in Eternity, they are listed as supporting players. The major nominations are Best Picture, From Here to Eternity, Roman Holiday, The Robe, Julius Caesar, and Shane. Best Actor, Burt Lancaster or Montgomery Clift in Eternity, Richard Burton for The Robe, and William Holden in Stalag 17. The awards will be made before live television cameras at Hollywood's Pantages Theater Monday night. This is Erskine Johnson with Hollywood Today.
I hated Eternity. It was depressing. War movies shouldn't be depressing. Frankly, I like a movie that kind of cheers a body up.
World War I veteran, prominent Republican, and former draft board chairman, Colonel Joseph Raffaele. I see you've ended your self-imposed exile to this program.
Yeah, there's something therapeutic about being here. It's known that I know more than anybody else here about everything, and that's reaffirming to my well-being.
So it helps you to be around slackers like us?
I feel like I can make you people better. Or, like, since you've got the labor comrade coming up, I thought I'd stick around.
Good of you to be so unselfish with your time.
Yeah, here's a song that everybody loves to end with, but we kind of like to do things a little differently around here, campers.
That's the trouble with you young people. There's just not enough conformity. Always have to do things differently. Is that what America says?
You're the McGuire sisters, and good night, sweetheart. It's time to go.
Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. I hate to leave you, but I really must say good night, sweetheart. Good night. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Well, it's time to go. I hate to leave you, but I really must say good night, sweetheart. Good night. Well, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Baby, I just can't treat you right. Don't mean maybe, because I love you so. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go. Good night, sweetheart. Well, it's time to go.
McGuire Sisters and Good Night Sweethearts on KUWS.
Let me introduce Superior Federation of Labor editor Jay Fisher. Good evening.
I hate to admit it, but I'm agreeing with the Colonel about From Here to Eternity. It was not a fun flick.
But that great kiss from Burt Lancaster to Deborah Carr on the beach with the waves and the seaweed, that was worth the price of admission.
Yeah, smutty comments like that that gets under the Colonel's skin. Right, and you'll notice that the best movie didn't even make the Oscar list, and it's hands down, I'm telling you, hands down my favorite.
Peter Pan?
Peter Pan was good, except that Peter fella kind of looked like a girl. I mean, that was disturbing.
You found Peter Pan attractive?
So, Mr. Fisher, please go ahead.
Yeah, right. Nick of time, too, I think.
What do you mean? I found Peter Pan attractive there, McDickle.
I'm here to tell you that everyone thinks they're an expert on labor these days. Pick up a paper in Atlanta or Philadelphia or San Francisco and turn to the letters to the editor section. 9 times out of 10, you find a letter from an expert telling how evil unions are. It may be from a housewife who never belonged to a union, never had to work for wages, never sat in on a negotiating session, never saw a union contract. But I'll let Vancouver Sun columnist Harry Mather say it best, brothers and sisters. He writes about a gentleman, and no doubt a scholar, writing against getting organized. He says it makes everyone regimented, takes away their liberties, and be dominated by the union line. Mather says before unions, man was free to do an honest day and a half's work for a day's pay. He was at liberty to stand on his own and bargain with the boss. Nobody regimented him. Nobody is free from the regimentation of the union, not even the non-union guy. The good old six-day work week that we older workers remember so well and were so attached to, well, that was scrapped. The five-day work week was foisted on us. Instead of being free to work 70 hours in 6 days, we're now forced to work 40 hours in 5 days. I rest my case.
Superior Federation of Labor editor Jay Fisher.
I'm confused. Am I supposed to like or hate this Mather guy?
You, my dear Colonel, aren't supposed to like Harry Mather.
That's kind of a double negative again, and that always discombobulates my mind. And Elwin, by the way, don't be calling me dear.
One more thing. Brothers and sisters of the projectionists and stage employees have a special meeting tomorrow night at the Labor Temple.
So, Colonel, what is your favorite movie of 1953?
1953, hands down, War of the Worlds. They didn't even mention it. I mean, we kicked some Martian tail in that movie, and I think they really do have a tail.
Coming up, since we all have the best people with strong opinions, we'll talk about tail gunner Joe McCarthy.
That wasn't scheduled, and it isn't in my job description.
Here's Jerry Vale and You Don't Know Me on the Evening Gather Round Show.
You give your hand to me, and then you say hello, and I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone could tell. You think you know me well, but you don't know me. No, you don't know the one who dreams of you at night and longs to kiss your lips and longs to hold you tight. To you I'm just a friend, that's all I've ever been, but you don't know me. For I never knew the art of making love, though my heart ached with love for you. Give your hand to me, and then you say goodbye. I watch you walk away beside the lucky guy to never, never know. The one who loves you so, no, you don't know me. goodbye. I watch you walk away. Beside the lucky guy to never, never know. The one who loves you so. No, you don't know me.
Gary Vale and You Don't Know Me on KUWS. Okay, in this corner we have Colonel Joseph Buster Raffley, and in the other, it's that labor guy Jay Fisher. Refereeing tonight's discussion about the pros and cons of Senator Joe McCarthy is Lou Martin.
Why on earth would we invite such a divisive discussion about such a politically troubled man between two political polar opposites?
Or we could talk about Peter Pan looking more like a girl.
All right, I'll start. All right, Joe McCarthy. Joe McCarthy might be rough, but the commies were, well, they were pretty rough when they hung that Iron Curtain across Europe. And then they put down the rebellions by citizens in Poland, East Germany, with that whole Warsaw Pact thing.
Our brothers and sisters behind the Iron Curtain are languishing under communist puppet regimes controlled by the Soviet Union. That's true enough. But McCarthy is witch-hunting true Americans. You talk about lockstep, this guy wants everyone to think like he does, believe how he does, act like he does, and even talk like he does, or they'll go on some red list and get their chops busted testifying before his committee.
All right, as long as you got your Alger Hiss and your Ethel and Julius Rosenblums, you got trouble. Joe's not afraid to look into the rocks to find these people who betray their own country.
That's Rosenboigs, and McCarthy has nothing to do with Hiss or the Adam spies. He's going after little old ladies like that Annie Lee Moss, who did nothing except lose her job because he called her a commie.
You see, we're learning both sides of the argument, and it's civil.
I feel impending doom.
Only a guy who, like, from here to eternity because he wanted to watch one man kiss a woman would defend Pinko.
I didn't say that. Timmy did. You don't let facts stand in your way, eh, Colonel?
Oh, that's right. It was McMichaels. But if you didn't like War of the Worlds...
I did. But I liked Roman Holiday better. You know, Audrey Hepburn and everything.
You mean, Catherine Hepburn.
No, it's Audrey
no,
Hepburn.
It's Catherine.
You don't know what you're talking
about. Oh, boy, funny how these conversations turn out.
Right,
time for one last never. Here's Gogie Grant and Wayward Wind on the Evening Gather Round Show.
Thank you. next of kin to the wayward wind.
Gogie Grant and Wayward Wind on KUWS. All right, when we last left the colonel and that labor guy, they were debating the pros and cons of Senator Joseph McCarthy and the upcoming televised Army-McCarthy hearings. Let's listen in, Camper.
Yeah, I'm telling you, television stinks, that's all.
Oh, brother, now that's analytical.
Well, it doesn't exactly stink, but it's no good for Tail Gunner Joe. I mean, the guy looks all pasty as it is. Tasty and kind of, you know, sweaty.
Don't forget the beady eyes and that one strand of hair that hangs down over his forehead.
Frankly, it just isn't a good medium for McCarthy.
Agreed. Well, it's good to have you back, Colonel. Did I just say that?
Did I just hear that?
Now, isn't this a regular campfire moment? All we need are marshmallows, graham crackers, and Hershey bars. Coming up on the WFTV Channel 38 tonight is The Life with Luigi, The Red Button Show, Pabst Blue Ribbon Boxing, and WFTV Armchair Theater. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same campground, the good Lord willing, and the Martians aren't mad at the Colonel for saying that they have tails.
You know, I feel better. Even lighter.
All that castigating took a load off, did it?
Yeah, it's kind of a personal renewal, like spring in Vermont.
Or flying to Never Neverland with Peter Pan.
Yeah. Like that, you know, kind of a pixie dust moment, you know, like that, yeah.
For Lou Martin, this is Tim Michaels reminding you to keep that campfire lit.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1954, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Tom Martinson, Joel Anderson, John Munson, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1954 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.
World War One veteran, Republican, no.
Prominent Republican.
Yes. Don't want to slate you.
Yeah.